Larry, did you buzz him in?
God bless you, Larry. I jumped into the open elevator and banged on the button, eager to get up there and write things with us. It was bad enough that I had these big feelings for her when she wanted nothing from me, so the last thing I wanted was for our friendship to be on uneven footing as well. When I got to her door and knocked, Rose jerked it open.
You don't want to talk to her right now, Jules, she said quietly. Trust me.
Max? Larry walked into the living room, looking at me with eyebrows in his hairline as he said in disbelief,
Did you fucking warn the bride, you little asshole?
Well, that news traveled fast.
Where did you hear that?
Because the bride called off the wedding after an old friend told her to.
Fuck.
Larry, is Sophie? I'm right here. Her cheeks were flushed as she came from the hallway and headed straight for me. And please answer Larry's question.
We're going outside, Larry said,
and proceeded to grab Rose's sleeve and drag her out onto the balcony. I watched them bump into each other and wondered what the hell I'd missed. She couldn't be that upset, could she? As soon as they went outside, it felt heavy and quiet in the apartment. Sophie glared at me, her chin raised and her eyes narrowed behind those glasses. I said,
I brought you champagne. Did you warn your ex?
I sighed and shifted my weight to one foot, still confused.
It's not quite that melodramatic, Soph. I just gave her a heads up that, how could you do that? She asked,
and her voice was loud and pissed.
I got the job. I took the job, and I was going to discreetly do the job the way we've always done it, to help someone out. I cannot believe you just went behind my back and spilled everything to Lily fucking Beth.
What the hell was that? I searched her face for a clue as I said, I told you I couldn't.
But why couldn't you?
She pushed her hair out of her face and said,
Why the hell couldn't you just live your life without reconnecting with her? It's not normal, Max, that you'd feel so protective of your ex that you'd move heaven and earth to save her regardless of what everyone else wanted.
I didn't know what to say because holy shit, her anger seemed misplaced. The things she was ranting about made her sound almost jealous, which couldn't be the case. Could it? I felt a little jittery as I looked into her eyes and told her the truth.
I'm sorry, Soph, but I just couldn't hurt her like that.
But you were fine with hurting me, she said, and her voice was tight. I hurt her. If going to Lily had hurt her, that meant Sophie cared, didn't it? I stepped closer, my heart pounding as I said quietly, Soph, did I hurt you? Her eyes were on mine, just holding for a minute, and I couldn't stop myself from tucking her hair behind her ears as we watched each other. And then I watched her realize what she'd said. A wrinkle formed between her eyebrows as I watched her realize that it might be true. Her eyes darted everywhere and she blinked fast, her thoughts running wild, and she gave her head a little shake.
No, it's okay,
I said, desperate to reassure her. I held up my hands and said, Just because you might feel something?
I don't,
she interrupted, stepping back from me. But if you do, I said calmly, that doesn't mean anything.
I don't, okay, Max?
She snapped, her eyes panicked like a trapped animal.
I don't.
I swallowed and decided to burn down the world with the next words I spoke. Well, I do. She inhaled sharply, and one of her hands came to her throat.
No, you don't.
Damn it, Sophie, I do. I'm crazy about you, but that doesn't mean things between us have to-
There is no between us,
she said in disgust, looking everywhere but my face.
God, Max, I told you I didn't want this.
I didn't either, but it's here. I clenched my jaw as emotion slammed into me, as every feeling I'd ever felt for her decided to make itself known at that very second.
I fought it hard, because trust me, this is the last thing I want.
But now, you consume me, Soph, every single part of me, and I like it. I can't drive without thinking about your impractical car, can't run without thinking about the way you run, can't put on a fucking hard hat without picturing the way you looked in that stupid yellow hat. Somehow, you've become my center, and God help me, it feels right. No, she whispered, not even to me, but to herself, and a tear escaped from the corner of her eye. I waited even longer as my heart raced. Tell me you don't think about that night in Detroit all the fucking time, I said, needing to remind her. We are unreal together, Soph. It's so good. Sophie swallowed and closed her eyes. But when they opened again, I just knew. There was a decision there, in the depths of those whiskey eyes, and I hated it. She said, please go. Please go? I felt the knife go through my heart and shook my head, pissed, at her. Is that really what you're going to say when I just bared my goddamn soul to you? She wiped out her cheeks, looking so sad that it broke my heart, and said, please, Max, just go.
Chapter 45. Sophie. Max, can we talk? I wanted to cry when I saw the message, because already everything had changed. I still had the same Pavlovian response to seeing his name pop up, where my body betrayed me and felt happy that my best friend was texting. But then my stomach clenched and reality rushed back at me. He hadn't texted or called since he left last night, which made me both relieved and so sad I could barely breathe. It felt empty already, not talking to him all day, but I'd get used to it. I hadn't even known him all that long. I glanced over at Edie's office, glad she wasn't in today, because I didn't have the energy to fake happy. It was much better just burying myself in work. I hadn't even stopped for lunch, desperate to just keep working. But Max's message had been like a record scratch, and now I was frozen. I texted, I don't think that's a good idea. Max.
So what, that's it? We're just not friends anymore?
I sighed and sat back in my chair, replied, I just want to pretend yesterday never happened.
Max, please let me take you to dinner or coffee and talk to you. I promise it will be painless.
Painless no longer applied to Max Parks. Because somehow the universe had gotten inside of our harmless friendship and screwed up all the gears, lacing in feelings that made my whole heart violently ache when I found out he'd warned Lilibeth. It felt like a betrayal, even though in the end I knew it wasn't. But I almost felt more hurt by Max than I did by Stuart. My phone started ringing, but instead of Max, it was Rose. Just what I need. I sighed. Hello?
Hi, Sophie?
That wasn't Rose, even though it was her number calling. I said, yes?
This is Benny from next door.
Benny Ginsburg, my very nosy next door neighbor? Why the hell would that guy be calling me? Hi, Benny, is Rose okay?
Rose is,
he said dramatically, and I could tell he was waiting for me to ask. Why are you calling from her phone? I did not have time for nonsense today.
Yeah, well, she asked me to.
Okay? God, was this man going to make me pull the reason for his call out of him?
She said she wanted you to know that the squad just took Larry to the hospital.
What? I asked, gasping as my heart started racing. I sat straight up in my chair. Oh my God, what happened? I opened the top drawer of my desk, grabbing my keys and standing.
I'm not really sure. Someone found him in the stairwell, short of breath and having chest pains.
Oh my God, I said again, closing my laptop and rushing down the hall toward the elevators. Is he okay?
Again, I'm not really sure, he repeated, sounding annoyed. I just said I'd call you.
Well, do you know what hospital they're taking him to, Benny? I asked, sounding like a dick, but too freaked out to care. Does Rose?
UNMC, he said, but I'm not sure. Thank you. I disconnected the call just as Max texted,
I don't want to beg, but I'm already on my knees and will provide video proof if you don't believe me.
I blinked fast and texted as I walked. I just got a call that they're taking Larry to the ER for shortness of breath and chest pains. Max,
he's going to be fine, Steinbeck. You okay to drive, or do you want me to pick you up?
I was lightheaded as I texted, I'm okay. And I literally sprinted to the elevators. Max.
What hospital?
I pounded on the lobby button as the elevator took an eternity. Me. UNMC.
Max. Drive safe. I'm on my way.
Larry? I said quietly, sitting down on the physician's stool in the ER exam room and wheeling it next to the bed. Larry's eyes were closed, and he looked pale and weak. Old, which terrified me. I realized as I raced across town to get here that he actually was my best friend. I glanced at the blue machine he was attached to, and it appeared that his blood pressure and oxygen levels were relatively normal, so at least there was that.
Sov,
he whispered, his eyes fluttering open. It's me, loser, I said, grabbing his hand and holding it between mine, biting my lips so I wouldn't cry. How are you feeling?
Where's Julian?
He asked, his eyes moving behind me. No idea, I replied. Are you comfortable?
Listen, I heard your fight last night,
he said, his voice breathy and hard to understand. I scooched a little closer to better hear him.
And you're acting like a child.
What? I whispered, not wanting to upset him, but he had been the one to go off about Max warning the bride. He'd been the one to tell me it was the dickest of all dick moves. I loved that he wanted to spar, even when he was weak, but he needed to save his strength. I said, maybe we should talk about this later.
I don't know how much time we'll have,
he said, and a knot formed in the pit of my stomach. Did that mean something? Had he already been given a prognosis? His face blurred in front of me as I tried blinking the tears away, and he said,
so listen to me now, okay?
I nodded and squeezed his hand. Okay.
From what I could hear,
he rasped, his breathing shallow.
Max is nuts about you, but you don't want that.
Right, I said, not wanting to think or talk about Max when Larry was lying in a hospital bed looking like this. Especially when I was still so pissed at myself for falling. How the hell had I fallen into a pit of feelings for Max when I'd worked so hard to keep my feet firmly planted on solid ground?
So are you not attracted to him, is that it?
He asked, raising a very overgrown white eyebrow. Oh, no, I said, remembering Detroit. Max and I have chemistry through the roof.
He's an asshole, then. I kind of thought he would be, honestly. He's too hot to be nice.
He's actually not, I said, thinking that it had to be a good sign that, though weak, Larry didn't seem to be in any kind of pain.
Is he a player?
No.
A pervert?
I get what you're doing, I said, smiling in spite of myself, and I get it, but we can talk about Max after you're home, okay?
We're talking about him now, damn it, because there's no time to waste.
The tears returned, and I quickly wiped them away, not wanting to worry him.
I can't understand why you'd back away from a really good shot at true love.
Haven't we talked about this? I asked on a mirthless, sad laugh. I thought you agreed with me that there's no such thing.
I just wanted you to shut your face hole, so I faked it,
he said, closing his eyes.
The truth is that who gives a flying fuck if you've been hurt in the past? Who cares if you've been cheated on? You have to get hurt to get to the good stuff, don't you see?
No.
When you're a baby, you don't stop taking steps just because you've fallen once or you'd never walk. The falls help you learn how to walk, for fuck's sake, to make balance and gait adjustments. If you never fell, you'd do something outrageously stupid, like walk on your toes like a ballerina, which would result in you getting your ass kicked every day of your life for looking like a dipshit.
That doesn't make any sense,
but the first part did,
he said, and I nodded in agreement.
Think about this. What if you could see into the future and know that Max was only going to live for 2 more weeks? Would you want to spend 2 weeks being his friend and holding your feelings at bay, wasting what you've been given? Or would you want to spend every minute of every day loving him with every single part of you? I blinked back tears. Holy shit. Was he right? Was I wasting what we'd been given? And the truth of the matter is that if you fell madly in love with him today and threw all caution to the wind, and then he cheated on you 2 years from now, would it really feel that much worse than denying yourself the love and companionship you deserve than how you feel right now? Larry, I sighed, but couldn't come up with more than that because for some reason his words were making sense. There was a knock at the door and Rose entered, looking irritated.
Rose,
Larry said, closing his eyes.
Sit up, you damn liar,
she hissed, reaching out and delivering a firm smack to his shoulder.
Rose, what are you doing?
I asked, standing up and stepping between Rose and Larry. He's supposed to be resting.
Resting what? His lips? Rose looked pissed.
Can it, Rosebud? Larry said. I narrowed my eyes and asked Rose, what are you talking about?
He's not having a heart attack, for Christ's sake!
She scowled at Larry.
He had an anxiety attack after getting caught making out with the grocery delivery guy in the stairwell.
What?
Casanova here got caught red-handed, red-lipped to be more accurate, getting nasty in the stairwell, so he acted like he was code blue to distract Mrs. Ginsburg, the poor dear, who happened upon his stairwell seduction while trying to get in her steps.
The stairwell? I said in disbelief.
The stairwell, she repeated. And then he asked Benny to call you just to add more drama to his bullshit heart attack.
Well,
and what kind of an animal, I know you hear me, Larry, you goddamn animal, is so hot and bothered that they can't even wait and go at it in a public stairwell?
I glanced down at Larry and he winked while waggling his eyebrows before closing his eyes and muttering,
stairwell.
You little shit, I said, then basically lectured him for an hour about what a dick he was for scaring me. But after I left the two of them at the hospital, pissed and exhausted from the burst of fear and worry, Larry's words kept replaying in my head. And as eccentric as the guy was, he was right about one thing. Having my heart eventually broken by Max couldn't feel much worse than it felt to not have him in my life at all, could it? So what was I supposed to do?
Chapter 46. Max. Thanks for the ride. Of course, I said, putting my truck in park as Rose hopped out with Larry right behind her. I'd raced to the hospital after Sophie's text, and by the time they let me into his room, after not knowing Larry's last name and not being family, she was already gone. And since Rose had taken an Uber to the hospital and Larry arrived by ambulance, they both needed a ride home. Can I walk you guys up? I was dying to know if Soph was home or if she'd gone back to work. Of course, since she'd known I was coming to the hospital and left anyway, she definitely wouldn't want to see me if she was home. Rose grinned like she knew I only wanted to see Sophie, and I realized that was the first smile she'd ever given me. We're good, Max, but thank you so much. You called me Max, I said, half to myself because she usually called me Julian. That's because you don't remind me of Julian anymore. Who is Julian? I asked.
Famous porn star, very handsome, Larry said.
And then they turned and walked inside the building. I honestly wasn't sure if I was supposed to be flattered, insulted, or disgusted. When I got to my building, I realized in my rush to get to the hospital, I'd left my wallet at work. I didn't have my garage pass, so I had to find a spot on the street. God damn it. Impossible task downtown on a Thursday afternoon when the entire city was at work. I drove around and eventually found a spot a few blocks away, closer to Soph's building than my own. After locking it up and plugging the meter, I took a good 3 steps before I saw it. Fuck me. There was Nick, her black car parked a few spots away. It felt like a fucking gut punch, seeing her Ray-Bans on the dash and the sweater she'd worn in Detroit on the passenger seat, like a cruel reminder of what I'd probably already lost by caring too much. When I got into my building, I had to use my key at the vestibule door, since I didn't have my badge, and something about that pissed me off. What a fucking terrible day. I threw the door open when it unlocked, so hard that it slammed into the wall behind it with a loud bang. Dear God, you scared the crap out of me. My heart stopped, and my entire body froze. I turned around, and there was Sophie, curled up on the oversized reading chair that sat in front of the mailboxes, her eyes heavy like she'd been asleep, her heels lying on the floor in front of her. Hey, I said inanely, trying to figure out what this meant, what her presence in the lobby of my building meant. Can you spare 5 minutes? She asked, climbing to her feet and gathering her shoes. Her face was unreadable, her hair a little wild, and I had no fucking idea what was going on. Of course. I held the door for her, and neither of us said a word as we waited for the elevator and rode it up to my floor. I forced myself not to look at her. I'd already shown my cards, and she knew how I felt, because the last thing I wanted was to look like a lovesick loser. Especially when I was betting she was about to give me a "let's forget everything you said about feelings" speech. I unlocked the door, and as we walked inside, I said, "Do you want something to drink?" "That depends," she said, dropping her shoes on the floor of the entryway. "Are you going back to work today?" I looked down at her face, at those autumn eyes, and just shook my head. "Then please have a whiskey with me," she said, and I wished I knew what was going on in her head. Cookie appeared out of nowhere and weaved his way around my legs, but I didn't have time for him at the moment. "Well, come on then," I replied, walking away from her and toward the kitchen. "On the rocks?" "Yes, please," she said. And my shoulders were tense as I went straight for the booze cabinet and pulled down a bottle of Jameson. Because all of a sudden, it occurred to me that if she said she wanted to pretend yesterday hadn't happened, I wasn't sure I was willing to do that anymore. Somehow, confessing my feelings had spoken them into an undeniable existence. "So what's up, Sophie?" I made our drinks with my back to her, doing my best to sound chill when I was anything but. She cleared her throat, and I tried to ignore the smell of her perfume. "So, I owe you multiple apologies." I turned around with our lowball glasses in hand, only to see she'd hopped up onto the kitchen counter so her bare legs were dangling over the edge. God, she was beautiful. "Thank you," she said as I held out a glass to her. "You're welcome." I leaned my backside against the counter behind me, facing her, and lifted the Jameson to my mouth. "So, hang on." She tossed hers back, pounding the 2 fingers in 2 swallows. When she set it down, she must have seen my raised eyebrows because she shrugged and said, "What?" I just shook my head and motioned for her to continue. "The first apology is for being a shitty friend." Sophie glanced down at her phone resting on the counter before saying, "I should have asked you if you were okay when Lilibeth resurfaced in your life, or how it made you feel that she was engaged. A good friend would have wanted to know what it was like talking to her after all this time, but I was jealous and selfish and wasn't there for you. I'm sorry." "That's okay," I said, shocked by her apology. That definitely wasn't what I'd been expecting her to say. "I want to circle back to this and discuss because I care," she said, glancing down at her phone again, "but I'm kind of on a mission and need to keep going if that's okay." Did I just see bullet points on your phone? I swear to God, it appeared she was looking at a PowerPoint. She stared at me for a minute, squinting a little as if deciding whether or not she should come clean. I might have made a quick presentation grid, just to be sure I didn't forget anything. Carry on, I said, not feeling good about the possibilities of that, though it was absolutely on brand for her. I also want to apologize for taking the wedding when you asked me not to. Just like my previous point, instead of respecting your feelings, I charged forward with what I wanted to do because of my feelings. Her feelings. What the fuck were they? And that brings us to the topic of my feelings. She glanced down at the phone again, but instead of continuing to use it as a reference, she raised it in front of her face and just started reading word for word, like she was regurgitating white paper information she'd read while having a lunch and learn. I don't know how it happened, Max, but somehow, in spite of every attempt we made to avoid it, there are feelings between us. I cannot label your feelings, but mine are— Stop, I interrupted, taking another sip and letting the whiskey burn down my throat. I couldn't believe she was giving me a PowerPoint breakdown of her emotions. She looked up, a crease between her eyebrows. What? I want you to tell me how you feel. I was trying, she said defensively, with her eyebrows scrunched together and her eyes returned to her phone. Where was I? Oh, here. She cleared her throat. I cannot label your feelings, but mine are— Dear God, stop, I groaned, unable to take any more of this. She sighed and lowered her phone, scowling at me. Why do you keep doing that when I'm trying to tell you how I feel? Because I don't want the fucking presentation, I said, suddenly angry, though not really sure about what. I want you to talk to me, to give me the unedited version of what's going on inside your head. I can't do that, she said, disbelief in her voice as if I'd asked for something impossible. Because I don't even know or understand that. What I've come up with instead is a solid no. I slammed my drink on the counter and took a step closer. Tell me how you feel. How do I feel? She said loudly, her eyes narrowed as she looked up at me. I feel like shit. I feel terrified. I feel like everything has changed and nothing's going to work out and it's all going to explode in my face. Is that what you want me to say? If it's how you feel, I said, frustration boiling through me at her unwillingness to open herself up to me. Then fucking yes. Oh, okay, she said in irritation, her eyes flashing. Well, if we're doing this, then I should tell you that I hate the way I want to talk to you and be with you all the time. I hate that you were the only person I wanted to call after my interview and, oh yeah, the thought of you and your ex made me literally sick to my stomach, as in I puked out my car window when I heard you blew me off to see her. Her eyes were intense as she started going off. My brain now associates the smell of lavender with you in the hotel shower, so that sucks, and I keep replaying mirror sex in my head all the time like a porn addict, and I think I want to get a dog with you, and these are all nightmarish thoughts that will absolutely destroy me. But no. She pointed a finger at my chest, eyes blazing and bit out through gritted teeth. It will. I know this. That it is the death knell of my fucking heart, yet I cannot stop myself from wanting it all, and I don't want to want that, Max. I stepped closer so I was standing between her legs, and I raised my knuckles to her flushed cheeks. I hated how anguished all of this was making her, but I couldn't ignore the slow, buzzing burn that was building in my center as she said all the words I wanted to hear. I know, honey. She took in a big, shaky breath. And I'm scared that if we get in a relationship, I won't know how to trust you. Like, I don't think I can trust your feelings for me because I'm such a broken mess. Steinbeck. I ran my thumb over the soft column of her neck and said, it's okay to feel broken, because I am too. And as for the rest of those amazing run-on sentences you just yelled at me, we'll figure them out as we go. I looked into her eyes and admitted, but I don't know how to make you feel safe about us, because I don't know how the hell I'm going to feel safe about us either. I fucking hate it too. I do. Her eyes softened at that, and she bit down on the corner of her lip. But Soph, I know that I like you more than anyone else in the world. And that's it, isn't it? The thing that matters? Fuck love and relationships. I just want to be with you because you're my goddamn favorite person. And I feel like it's going to be impossible for you not to trust my feelings because you're going to see them in my eyes every time I look at you. Max, every single time, I said, knowing it was true. It's already there. Just look. Sophie's eyes moved all over my face, almost as if she was trying to find evidence of doubt. And then she pressed her lips together, shook her head. I can't imagine any two people more right for each other than us. I can't imagine any reason why we shouldn't be together when we both feel so much for each other. Shit. My voice cracked, and I glanced around the kitchen, desperate to make a point. See? No one is objecting, Soph. She blinked fast, like she was thinking hard. Please, Soph. I wished I could read her mind, especially when she sighed. A long, deep sigh. Almost like she was accepting it. Please, Soph. So, can I read you the conclusion of my bullet points, even though you apparently hate PowerPoint presentations? Her mouth turned up into a shy smile, and her eyes got that Twinkie-tossing wildness that I fucking adored as she brought her legs a little closer together, closing them around me. I think you might appreciate it. I guess, I said, setting my hands on her knees and wanting to slide her dress up so badly. But PowerPoints are the worst. I know, honey, she said, giving me a teasing look as she reached for her phone. Brat. Shh. Sophie scrolled through a ridiculous number of slides before saying, In conclusion, love is still a lie, and I want no part of that foolish fairy tale. This thing that I feel for you, however, this friendship, undeniable chemistry, kinship, respect, admiration, happiness, or the acronym FUCKRA, if you will, is outrageously potent, and I would like to explore it further. If there is availability on your calendar, I'm very interested in having meaningful sex with you. She raised her eyes from her phone, looking incredibly vulnerable as she added, But I'd like to have sex for you this time, instead of just for me. I'd like to have sex with you, Max.
Chapter 47. Sophie. He didn't say a word, but his jaw flexed and his eyes were hot as he watched me. So, I said, not knowing how to perceive his silence.
So, no. No, thank you, he said, his voice husky, but his hands found my hips and slid me closer to his body, dragging me to the edge of the kitchen counter.
No, thank you, I repeated, my pulse skittering as I felt his fingers dip under the hem of my dress to rest on the bare skin of my upper thighs.
I don't want you to ever have sex that isn't for you, Soph, he said, lowering his mouth to drop the softest kiss on my neck.
You getting yours, with me, is the fucking hottest thing I've ever experienced. My eyes fluttered closed.
Yeah?
Hell fucking yeah, he growled and dragged his teeth over my throat. I didn't know if it was the aftermath of my emotional confession, but raw want clawed at me, and my fingers clenched in his hair. Just like that, I needed him. I didn't want foreplay or kissing or to be carried romantically into his bedroom. I just needed to be with him. Now.
Max, I said on a breath, strung out on the punch of lust. I have a condom in my jacket pocket.
His tongue trailed down my neck, and he sounded half asleep when he rasped, God, I love how organized you are. Is that the attachment to your presentation?
Yes, I half said, and half moaned as he pulled me even closer, so our bodies were flush as my thighs squeezed around his hips. I could feel his hardness, and I wanted all of him.
We've got plenty of time to get to your jacket pocket, he said against my throat. There's no rush. But there is, actually, I admitted, grinding against him and making his breath hiss through his teeth, because I think I'm going to die if I don't feel you inside me immediately.
So you're saying?
Max lifted his head, looked down at me, and said in a low voice,
that I'll be saving your life if I fuck you in my kitchen right now?
The tension in his face, the fire in his eyes, weakened my knees as he visibly swallowed. I'm dying as we speak, I breathed, reaching for the button of his pants as my blood pounded in my veins. So you better get moving. His mouth attacked mine, aggressive and wild, like it always was, like no one else's had ever been. Since the very beginning, he'd kissed me like he was ravenous for me, like my kisses fueled his existence, and he needed as much of them as he could possibly get, or he would surely perish. I knew without a doubt that I could kiss him forever and never lose a single butterfly. It was like a fever dream, a blur of sound and breath as we frantically pulled at each other's clothing. I tore at his buttons and dragged up his t-shirt, my fingertips itchy for the heat of his skin, and he whipped off my dress and underthings like they'd been mere holograms, never standing a chance when faced with his sinful intent. And then, oh God, Max was there, suited up, grasping my hips in his hands and going so fucking deep. Our eyes met and locked, and a thousand words and emotions neither of us could express yet were exchanged in that gaze. It took my breath away, the fierce promise in that fiery stare, and a full-body shiver rippled through me as he started to move.
Did you know?
He bit out as he made my body hum with his exquisite movements, slow and thick, as he made my insides melt with the hot-blooded way he looked down at me.
That I fantasized about exactly this the day you came up to my place for water.
My eyes slid closed and my legs tightened around him, thighs trembling. The thought of him fantasizing about me was the equivalent of shooting gasoline directly into the center of a wildfire. I breathed. While I was still here, you thought about it?
Yep,
he said, making a sound in the back of his throat as he moved faster.
You stood right here, talking about kissing, and I swear to God I was picturing this.
It was getting faster and hotter, and I was burning alive as he slammed into me. Just this? I asked, my voice a cross between a whisper and a moan as he lowered his mouth and licked at my skin. Tell me everything.
Table two.
He breathed against my breast, and then his hands were under my ass, lifting me off the counter. He started kissing me again as he walked over to his gorgeous kitchen table with my legs wrapped around him, and I don't know how he did it so effortlessly, but in a hot second we were on top of it. Max laid me down on the center of the table, my back on the cool wood, as his mouth delivered kiss after smoldering kiss, and I would have made a comment about the impressive sturdiness of his kitchen furniture, but then he shifted, and shit, our new position intensified everything as he moved with the kind of relentless power that made it impossible to think at all. Fuck. He ground out, his voice thick as he pushed me farther up the table with the strength of his body. The muscles in his arms were rigid as he held himself above me, and I grasped at him for purchase, sliding my palms around his body to dig my fingernails into his backside and hold him tighter still. I chanted his name, my heels digging into the table as I moved with him, unraveling and going utterly mad as he drove into me. And just when I didn't think the wire of tension could get pulled any tighter, Max growled into my ear.
Now it's my turn to watch you shatter, Steinbeck. Go.
And I did.
Chapter 48 Max. Can I hear the presentation?
What?
Sophie looked up from the buttons she was working on as she walked out of the kitchen. She was wearing my dress shirt, which went down to her thighs, and I just pulled on my suit pants because someone had to open the damn door for the delivery driver. Yes, she'd ordered pizza mere moments after we finished, and now we looked like we'd been forced to share one outfit. I interrupted, I said, opening my desk drawer to grab cash for the driver, and I'd really like to hear what you were going to say. First of all, who are you that you have an envelope of cash in your desk drawer? John Gotti? And second of all, no. Her eyebrows were furrowed as she watched me slide two $20 bills into my pant pocket. You yelled at me when I tried presenting it to you. It's poker winnings, not drug money, I said, trying not to laugh when she looked so insulted. And I didn't yell. You did, too, and I said more than enough. She pushed up her glasses and lifted her chin. More than enough. And it was fucking perfection, I said, crossing the room because I needed to touch her. Her eyes fired up as I reached her, and her mouth twitched into a little smile as I grabbed the front of the shirt and gently pulled her against me. Her smile was like a power switch that controlled the brightness of my universe all of a sudden, and it was exhilarating and terrifying all at the same time. But now I want to hear the logistical insights of us from the brilliant, strategic-thinking woman I'm obsessed with. Is it weird that I prefer brilliant, strategic thinker over baby girl or some other sexy pet name? She asked, and the fact that I knew she meant it made me smile. So weird, I said, lowering my mouth to her ear and whispering, "You fucking brilliant, strategic-thinking vice president." And now I'm this close to another orgasm, she teased, laughing when I bit down on the side of her neck. So, I prodded, lifting my head. The truth of the matter was that I regretted cutting her off just when she'd been about to discuss her feelings. What she'd said to me in the heat of the moment was all that I needed. But I was curious to see what else she'd thought was worthy to include in her discussion. "Hmm," she said, dragging her bottom lip through her teeth as her eyes narrowed. "How about I give you my phone and you can read the slides?" "I don't know," I started to say, but the door buzzer cut me off. Sophie stuck her hand in my pocket, grabbed the money, and said with a devilish grin, "You can read them while I go get the pizza." "You're not wearing pants," I said in disbelief as she walked toward the door. "The shirt is long." "I don't even know where your phone is," I yelled as she pulled open the front door. "On the counter, right next to the spot where you nailed me," she yelled back with a laugh as she exited. I ran over to the door and yelled into the hallway, "I don't know your passcode, dipshit." "I don't have one, asshat," she yelled back as I heard the elevator ding. "So go crazy, and I'll be right back." I just stood there, staring at the spot where she'd been, my heart paralyzed with feelings. Fuck me. I'd fallen so hard that I wasn't even trying to get up.
Chapter 49. Sophie.
"Put down the pizza." Max stood there waiting for me beside the entry table, his dark eyes alight with a ferocity that sent liquid heat pulsing through my veins. My heart started racing, but I didn't say anything, just set the pizza on the entry table and let the door slam behind me.
"Your presentation."
He cleared his throat, lifted his hands like he was going to say something, then set them on top of his head and sighed. Max.
"Shh."
He held up a hand and gave his head a single shake, silencing me. He looked like a mob boss at that moment, a romance novel version of one, because he was wearing a very expensive watch and very nice suit pants that were hanging loosely below the waist. His belt lay forgotten on the kitchen floor, and nothing else. Just that ridiculously muscular chest, those washboard abs, biceps for days, and sex-must dark hair that looked downright sinful. The contours of his face were amplified by the volatile expression in his eyes, and my stomach filled with butterflies as I waited for him to speak.
"In your presentation," he said, "you used the word love."
"Now, wait a minute," I said defensively. "I clearly stated multiple times that I don't believe in it."
"But you said, and I quote, that if you did, this is what it would feel like.
His jaw clenched.
You said that.
I didn't know how to respond, because I was panicking. I didn't want to scare him away with that statement, because even though he'd said nice things, it didn't necessarily mean he was ready to become official. I was terrified that I was foolishly in love with him, even though love wasn't real. I'd felt brave when I added that bullet point, like I was being maturely self-aware of my confusing feelings, but hearing it aloud was horrifying.
Max, stay the night.
He came closer, his voice low and hungry as his big body crowded me against the door.
I don't care about what you want to call this, but I want all of you. Every brilliant, beautiful piece of Sophie Steinbeck with me in my bed all night.
I swallowed and nodded, my eyelids heavy as I looked up at him, wanting every piece of him, too.
I don't want to scare you, but I'm not in love, but also kind of in love with you, Soph.
Something inside me lit up when he said that, felt a little less scared, because I realized that I trusted him. I trusted that he meant it, even though it came with no guarantee. I trusted that he'd take care of my feelings, and that he wouldn't lie about his.
I've never seen your bed, I said, half to myself, as I set my hands on his warm chest.
That's funny, he said, his eyes crinkling at their corners as he gave me a sexy grin, because in my head, you've logged a lot of hours there.
You know, you're kind of a pervert, I said around a giggle as his hand slid underneath the dress shirt to grab my ass.
It seems like you've fantasized about me a lot.
Oh, you have no idea.
Max lowered his shoulder and then casually lifted me into a fireman's hold, as if he carried women around his apartment like that all the time.
It's a real problem.
It is? It's a problem?
Sure, he said, walking down the hallway that I assumed led to his bedroom. Think about it. I'm standing in the elevator daydreaming about pinning you against the wall and making you moan and hum the way I love while we go wild in the elevator. And then the doors open and Dino, the super hairy building super, gets in and says, "How's it hanging?" as I'm trying to rapid scrub my brain. Very awkward.
I don't make a moan hum noise, do I? I asked, impressed by the sight of his huge bed and frothy white bedding as he walked into the bedroom.
You do, but it's hot, so don't you dare overthink it, he said, as he dropped me onto the bed and pounced on top of me.
His hard body, his laughing eyes, the soft cushion of his bed underneath me, everything in that moment was absolute perfection. So I took a deep breath and said, I'm not in love, but also kind of in love with you too, Max. He didn't say anything. But his smile disappeared. His eyes were serious, intensely so, and he swallowed. And then my heart pinched in my chest when he brushed his hand over my cheek.
My brilliant, he said, lowering his mouth to nip my chin. Strategic thinker.
He kissed me then, and it was different than any kiss we'd ever shared. His mouth was soft, sweet, teasing my lips with hot languidness and the patient promise of long sighs and trembling limbs. If he usually kissed me like an electrical storm, this was the slow, drizzling mist, awakening the dawn second by second with its hazy glow.
I could kiss you forever, I said, very nearly purring as I wrapped my arms around his broad shoulders.
No, you couldn't. He whispered back, his eyes crinkling at the edges as he raised his mouth to say,
because there's pizza in the entryway.
It's freakish how well you know me. I scrambled out from under him and sat up, pushing at my hair. So how do we feel about eating pizza in bed? He gave me a scowl, his dark eyebrows furrowing.
Bad. What about pizza on the bedroom floor? I asked. Knowing how he'd feel, but enjoying the tease anyway.
Like a picnic, he said.
Steinbeck.
Or, I said, putting my hands on his shoulders and pushing him flat on his back, relishing the flash in his dark eyes as I climbed over him.
I felt powerful, one knee on each side of his hips, hovering over him as his gaze drank me in. Maybe I should just make you so tired that you let me do whatever I want. His Adam's apple moved, and all 10 of his fingers found my waist, squeezed, hard.
I don't know if you can make me that tired, he said, his voice textured with heat, but feel free to give it a shot.
My hands dropped to the button on his expensive pants. I think I might.
Good girl, he growled, and the look he gave me was pure liquid fuel.
Chapter 50 Max. Sophie was going to be the death of me, because just the sight of her, the sight, was giving me seriously concerning palpitations. My blonde fantasy, up on her knees, wearing only my Oxford and those boardroom glasses, poised to lower herself and take charge. Honestly, it might have been hotter than if she were naked. Her hands dropped down to the bed just outside of my shoulders, and her hair fell around me as she licked at my mouth and brushed her body against mine like a stretching cat. I kissed her back like a man crazed, electrified by her skin sliding against mine, while her slim fingers slowly, way too fucking slowly, lowered my zipper. I grunted when she pulled her mouth away from my lips, and my fingers drove into her hair as her mouth slowly, way too fucking slowly, made its way down my body. I think I stopped breathing entirely in order to better feel every touch of her tongue, every pad of her fingertips, every brush of her soft body. Fuck, Sophie, I panted, groaning as she found me, as she made every muscle in my body go rigid with tension in response to her talented mouth. I thrashed against the pillow like a madman, gripped her hair as she destroyed me, and fucking begged my voice raw as I grew desperate to once again be inside her. But I didn't know true madness until she crawled back up my body. Because her hot, slick mouth found mine, her fingers unbuttoned every last button on the front of that shirt, and then she lowered herself onto me, to the hilt. Holy fuck! I groaned, struggling for words because it was total sensory overload as I felt her tongue in my mouth, her breasts on my chest, and her body surrounding me all in an instant. My hands clamped onto her waist, desperate to hold her there as she sat up and lost herself in me, in the way we fit together in pure pleasure. Her head fell back. Her eyes closed, her back arched, and Sophie started moving. Holy hell, I bit out, clenching my jaw against the intense pleasure, because nothing had ever felt that good. Ever. In my entire fucking life. I watched as she moved, graceful like a dancer, while those pretty hands slid everywhere I'd ever wanted them to be. The bands on her middle finger caught the light, sparkling, and my blood roared in my ears, desire clawing at me as my eyes tracked their every move. Every sinful touch, every sexual caress, every raw sound she made in the back of her throat in response sent me closer and closer to the edge. I gritted my teeth and held on, my arms shaking from the rising pressure. But when she opened her eyes and watched me, those whiskey eyes on mine as she moved faster, that was the end for both of us. You sure you don't want any? Sophie asked, sitting crisscross applesauce on the bed with a slice of pepperoni in her hand. This is seriously the best pizza I've ever had. You're a psycho, I said, my eyes only half open as I lay on a pillow watching her. I cannot believe you're eating pizza on your side of the bed.
I can't believe you're already calling this my side, she said, her eyes twinkling as she popped a pepperoni into her mouth.
Attached much?
Not at all, I said, fully in love with the idea of her eating pizza in my bed. But lines need to be drawn if eating in bed is going to become a thing. You're very sexy when you look exhausted like this, she said, her face 100% the Twinkie-tossing version of Soph. Honey, any time you want to make me look like this, I said, already hungry for her again, you are absolutely welcome. You know, I really do fuck Ryu, she said, wearing a grin that was almost shy. Kind of a lot, actually. Steinbeck, I replied, feeling sublimely happy. I think I fell in fuck Ra with you the minute you put Callie in a headlock.
Chapter 51. 1 year later. Sophie.
If anyone here knows of any reason why these two should not be married,
I do.
I glanced at Max as he stood there beside me looking as unbothered as ever, while the murmurs started rolling through the rows of guests.
Sir?
The pastor asked questioningly, looking unsure of how to proceed.
I do too.
I grinned at Max, and it was hard not to laugh. We turned around, and there were Larry and Rose, standing in the fifth row from the front, grinning like they were hilarious, as the rest of the guests looked absolutely confused. It was a small ceremony, with around 30 people seated on the rooftop of our building, white lights strung everywhere like we were surrounded by a curtain of low-hanging stars. Larry was dashing in his powder blue tuxedo from yesteryear that he considered retro chic. It wasn't. And Rose had opted for a long white dress to give me a run for my money.
What's the reason? Max asked, giving Larry a look. Sir?
The reason?
Rose said, giggling with the most adorable smile on her face.
Is that you're too perfect together and it makes the rest of us look bad.
Sit down, I said, blowing her a kiss as they obliged. Now, knowing it was a joke, everyone else got a good laugh, and we got back to the ceremony, our wedding ceremony. Because, as it turned out, love was actually real. It wasn't a trick at all, but more like this amazing thing that was mislabeled a shocking amount of the time, leading to endless confusion and piles of unhappiness. They really needed to fix that. But the truth was that if you looked hard enough and didn't die from the disappointments along the way, the real thing was out there. Which was why, when I looked into Max's eyes and said, I do. I didn't even have to cross my fingers. It was also why, when he slid the stunning amber and diamond ring on my finger that he'd chosen because it reminded him of my eyes, I was allowed to cry happy tears. The reception was basically just cigars and whiskey on the rooftop with a DJ playing some music in the background, and it was perfect. My parents looked way less stressed than they had after the Stewart wedding, and Asha gave the maid of honor toast she'd been destined to deliver but was denied the first time. Edie was there with her wife, Carmen, both happily living the retired life, as were Max's parents, who'd been official residents of the great state of Florida for just under a year. And yes, I got the VP job. Our plan worked perfectly. As an added bonus, Stuart resigned the day after I got promoted because, according to his exit interview, he knew his days were numbered. Which was funny, because we were in different departments. I couldn't have done anything to him if I'd wanted to. And I hadn't wanted to. Everything was magically, wonderfully perfect.
Sophie!
Larry yelled, rushing over when Max and I were just about to cut the cake. Yeah?
We've got a little problem, he said, lowering his voice.
What is it? I asked, catching the this-can't-be-good look that Max shot me as he picked up the cake knife.
Rose wants to have someone over at our place tonight, and she doesn't want him to know she lives with a man.
So, when I'd told Larry and Rose I was moving in with Max a few months ago, I assumed they would be devastated, Instead, they told me they'd been counting the days until I left because apparently I cramped their style.
And they hated Karen and Joanne.
So, can I crash at your place tonight?
Hell no, Max said, looking at him like he was out of his mind. It's our wedding night, Einstein.
So?
Larry said, giving Max an arm smack.
You've lived together for months. Be real, it's just another Saturday night.
The answer is yes, I said, giving Max a look, but only because I've made other accommodations for us tonight.
I thought you wanted to stay here.
Max had tried to convince me to go to a hotel with him until we left for our honeymoon in 2 days, but I'd insisted we stay at home, because I was planning something else entirely.
That's what I wanted you to think, I said, leaning into him a little. Now cake me.
He stepped closer, his eyes getting that amused squint that was my third favorite thing about him. The first two were wildly inappropriate.
I'm never going to be bored, am I?
Not a chance, objector.
Max. Stop! Sophie laughed and smacked my hand, which was pawing at the top of her dress. Your aim is pretty impressive, though. When can I take off this blindfold, Mrs. Steinbeck Parks? I reached out again, but only touched air this time. One sec. I heard a zipper. Yes, God. And some rustling before she said, Okay, now. I felt her move behind me, untying the bandana she'd insisted I wear since the minute we left the rooftop. The fabric slipped away, and for a hot second, I didn't know where we were because it was dark, the only light being the massive amounts of candles that appeared to be everywhere. But then my eyes adjusted. Holy shit. I looked around, my eyes taking in the beams and concrete as I turned in a circle. We were at the Orchid Hotel, the first project I'd been awarded since being promoted to president of Parks Construction, and my current obsession. The hotel was originally built in 1915 and was on the National Register of Historic Places, and we were restoring every bit of it to the tune of $75 million, right down to the hand-carved terracotta columns and over 800 windows. I spent more time here than I did at home sometimes, but Sophie loved it too. Holy shit, Soph. You like? I turned in the other direction, and there she was, sitting on a white-draped mattress in the center of the space, looking stunning in candlelight and, fuck me, some very transparent white lace. I walked toward her, totally blown away by the whole package. I can't believe you did this. She shrugged. Why not christen our marriage in the very honeymoon suite that you're bringing back to life? I narrowed my eyes and looked at the raw space. This is the honeymoon suite? Correct. She reached down beside the makeshift bed and grabbed a bottle of champagne from the floor. How did you know that? I asked, stopping in front of her and taking the bottle from her hand. Her eyes looked bright as she smiled up at me and said, Because you showed me the plans. I turned the bottle away and popped it, feeling absurdly, ridiculously under the influence of something illegal happy as I looked down at my bride. And you remembered.
And I remembered, she said, leaning back on her elbows and watching the liquid flow out of the bottle. Have I ever told you that you're my goddamn favorite person?
I held up the bottle so it didn't spill as I put a knee on the mattress and climbed over her.
You have, she said, getting that look on her face as she reached out a hand and tilted the bottle the tiniest bit so the bubbly liquid dampened the top of her lacy camisole and made it completely see-through. But why don't you show me instead? God, I love you so much, I said, nearly ripping off my jacket in my enthusiasm to toast my beautiful wife.
I love you too, she replied, then squealed as I proceeded to
accidentally spill a little more bubbly in my quest to get obscenely intoxicated on my wife's wedding champagne. There was literally nothing in our life that I would ever object to, ever again.
This is Helen Lazer. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Happily Never After by Lynn Painter. This program was directed by Garrett Scott, executive producer Sarah Jaffe, edited by TIDEF Studios. Text copyright 2024 by Lynn Painter. Production copyright 2024, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.